Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast, episode number 200. My name's Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders of Lima Charlie, and I will be your host. On today's episode, we speak with Philippe Humeau, CEO at CrowdSec. My guest today is Philippe Humeau, a cybersecurity expert and seasoned entrepreneur with a deep passion for enhancing global internet security. He is the founder and CEO of CrowdSec, an innovative open source platform that harnesses the power of community-driven threat intelligence to protect systems worldwide. Philippe's work focuses on collaborative approaches to cybersecurity, ensuring that organizations can stay ahead of evolving threats by pooling collective knowledge and resources. With years of experience building solutions that address complex security challenges, Philippe has made a significant impact on the field. Before joining CrowdStrike, Philippe successfully launched and led several companies within the cybersecurity space, further cementing his reputation as a thought leader and innovator. His journey reflects a commitment to addressing the most pressing challenges in the digital age, from fostering a safer internet to empowering businesses with the tools they need to defend against cyber attacks. Philippe is also an advocate for open source technology and community-driven solutions, underscoring his belief that collaboration is key to combating global threats. Thanks so much for being on the show with us, Philippe. It's a real honor to have you, and I apologize. I think I must have butchered your name at the beginning, so maybe you can say it for our listeners.
Super okay, Christopher. No problem. So my name is Philippe Humeau, and I'm the CEO of CrowdSec. And yeah, I can, you know, I love this collaborative part of the cybersecurity. I think it's our future, actually.
Awesome. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to cybersecurity. Were you a kid that grew up in front of computers, or did it come to you later in life?
No, yeah, definitely. I was 10 years old. My best buddy, father's had a IBM PC 8086, something like this. And we were playing games, you know, and we had no money to buy those games. So we had to actually crack them, as it was called back in the days. And my other friends had Amigas and Ataris, and they had also cracked games. And I remember one of my friends, he had an Atari ST512, and we were playing a lot of games on this computer, and it was every time the same person that cracked all those games. And the name was Jedi, you know, and I was like, wow, who is this Jedi guy? I mean, I was 10, you know. And later on, fast forward in time, I'm turning 19 and I'm in my engineering school prep year, and I'm discussing with the guy side by side, and I figure out it's actually him. I was like, you sign your stuff Jedi as well. Are you the guy that was cracking the games on Atari ST back in the days? He's like, yeah. But you're my age, right? Yes. So you're 19. Yes. So when you were cracking those games, you were 10? Yeah, 9 actually. Holy cow. What are you doing right now? I'm doing security. It's funnier. Show me.
That was it, eh?
Well, yeah, I dived into the rabbit hole.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And I think I don't want to date myself, but I think people that started maybe into computers in the last 20 years missed that sort of era when you would have these ASCII signatures show up when you ran programs and these hacker names and this whole era.
And freedom. There was basically no framework, no law, no whatever. So we're not outlaws, but we were trying whatever we wanted. And we broke into MSSPs and MSPs more than often just because we could, actually. We were dating girls in different universities. We had not their names, so we were connecting to the universities, hacking the directory, finding their whatever email or whatever to connect back with them. And that was normal for us. That was just second nature. Until we learned, like, no, actually, let's put some boundaries to it because that sounds weird. And then I became a white hat hacker.
Yeah, and you make a good point because it was the Wild West in a sense, and maybe that's a bad term. But, you know, it was this new frontier and there was no idea about right or wrong. And it was just sort of curiosity driving a lot of this stuff. There was no malicious intent.
No. And besides, there was no cybersecurity either. So basically, we're knocking 3 times on the door and the stuff would fall. So, you know.
Yeah. Let's get into it. From your perspective, what are the biggest issues currently facing cybersecurity today?
Well, automation played a large role. Well, if we sequence it like 10 years by 10 years, you know, 20,000 or 2000 to 2010, it was really the browser era, right? So everything was browser-based. People were migrating their stuff to the cloud. We had a lot of applications popping up and we became more and more reliant on them. And the problem is the browser were poorly secured and you could escape every other day from the sandbox that were non-existing even at that day. And you could compromise the machine. So we did a lot of work. I mean, the whole industry did a ton of work into securing this and it became eventually better. And then 2010 to 2020, it was definitely the ransomware era. So you could, however you were injecting your malware because you were compromising the external surface of a, you know, of a company, or you were just screwing up with the mind of people and, you know, spear phishing them or whatever. As long as you could inject something, you would cipher the whole stuff. So it's really the ransomware era. The thing is, nowadays, I think we are more on something, and dropped up automation. Automation became the next big thing. It was no longer about like compromising one specific company. It was about like compromising the most company you can in the least potential time for maximum profit. And now we enter this era of AI, and I think we'll be touching upon this again, but I think the automation is reaching a scale that we have no clue about. Back in the days, 10 years ago, one IP, a random IP over the internet was scanned 1,000 times a day. Today, it's more along the lines of 3,000 times, and we expect it to reach 20,000 times by the end of the year. So yeah, the magnitude of it is totally different.
Yeah, and maybe I'll jump ahead a little here, go out of sequence. Before the show, we had talked about multimodal offensive AI. It sounds like what you were just touching on there. Can you maybe explain what that is to our listeners and we can see where that goes?
Yeah, the MOAI name doesn't exist yet. I mean, it will be released in a week or two. So MOAI is multimodal offensive AIs. In the principle, you separate the potential offensive potential of AIs in two groups. The one that would be touching the people, right? So social layer of the company, of the target, and the technical layer of the target, everything that is servers, machines, and so on. So on the one end, on the left end, for the social part, you have everything, LLMs, image generation, video generation, sound bits generation, that can make them extremely credible that your boss is in distress or whatever. So it's present attack, but under steroids. But also, you can make sentiment analysis, detecting who is a disgruntled employee in a company or who is financially distressed or whatever, and make them direct proposal to actually buy their credentials, like their login password, the VPN notification, I don't know, ciphering keys, whatever.
So just to be clear, you're saying using the technology, like AI technology, you can analyze the employees inside of an organization and identify through their social posts and their social pressure presence who's under financial distress and likely to accept $10,000
a bribe, yeah,
to get the credentials into the organization.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that's fascinating. Yeah.
So take for example a very large company, say Siemens. The guys have hundreds of thousands of employees. All of them more or less have a digital footprint on social networks. You can easily find them, most of them, on LinkedIn. You then correlate different type of networks like Pinterest, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, X, and so on. And you will see the tone of what they are posting, all right? And who is distressed and who is likely to accept a bribe. So it's easy as part, you know, this is old story already. It's old. That's industrialized already. Don't even think it's not in production. That would be a huge mistake. Now, the next frontier we're exploring is the one that is actually acting on the technical layer. So the technical layer is everything, servers, et cetera. So the database for AI to learn are here. And where are they coming from? From CTF, capture the flags. Okay. So you have several professionals training teams that are competing to compromise machines. They are white-hat guys. They are really nice guys. They are not cyber criminals, but they leave trails in the logs on how they attacked the machine, how they were efficient, how they did compromise it in the first place. We also have all the CVE databases, you know, those common vulnerability assessment that are public on the web. There are also all kind of academical papers. Those are great materials for an AI to learn from, and they become extremely efficient, far more efficient than any human or automated scanner at it. So now combine the two of them, you have a multimodal offensive AI capable of acting both on the social layer and on the technical layer to compromise, say, Siemens. 3,000 machines exposed over the internet, 300,000 employees. It's a huge surface. There will be cracks. If you have to do it by hand, it's going to take you years. If you do it with an AI, it's going to take you milliseconds.
Yeah. Wow, that is fascinating and a little bit terrifying to think about.
No.
No, everything's fine. No worries.
Yeah. It's funny because we had this conversation a little bit before the show, and we're just talking about sort of how these kind of technologies can also be used in influence and in changing public opinion and just sort of this new age of machine accelerated manipulation and exploitation. So it's, how do we combat this, I guess, is my question.
You said have been used, right? Not will be used.
Yeah, has been used.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Just I misheard.
Yeah. So what do we do to combat this? What can an organization with 300,000 people and 30,000 servers or whatever do to protect themselves against this kind of advanced threat?
That's the problem. It's beyond APT. You know, it's another level of threat. So, and the worst part is you would get this for rental, like ransomware as a service. That would be Moai as a service, I'm pretty sure. Because there's no reason the industry is going to change a golden standard that works. It costs a ton of money to create those. But once you have them, you have to milk the cow. So every smaller piece of cyber criminal in the world will be able to access those extremely advanced tools because they will be renting them. So how do you protect yourself? Well, on the technical front, at CrowdSec, we are of the opinion that it's good to diffuse the payload. It's better to shoot the missile. So when you want to reach your target and you send something like a missile, like an attack over the internet is exactly like a missile. You use an IP address to carry your attack toward your destination. Pretty much every attack rely on an IP address, except the one that are really very close distance, like NFC, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, you know, airwaves, or plugging something physically on the machine. But our AIs we are discussing about, they don't have legs or bodies yet. So we can take for granted that they will carry their attacks through IP addresses, right? So they will have to go through the internet, over the internet at some point. The best way to capture them and to neutralize them is to neutralize the IP they will be using, rather than trying to diffuse a payload that will be randomized or excessively changing over time because their capacity of improvising are beyond our capacity to defend. So in our point of view, the collaborative defense here is essential because once someone has detected the trail, we share the trail, we all have the signature, we know which IP address is used, and we can diffuse it. As fast as they are used, we are burning them. So basically, instead of diffusing the nuke, you diffuse the ICBM that is behind it.
Okay, so it sounds almost like an immune system for the internet.
Yes. Yes. We often call this, actually, some people are trying to dub what we are, some call us like the ways of firewalls, other multiplayer firewall. And one said like, hey, you're the digital immune system. And it's quite true, actually, because maybe you're the first one seeing this payload. We'll help you diffuse it with the software. It's free open source. You can use it anywhere. But in return, you share it with us, the signature of the attack, the IP address and the behavior and the timestamp. And CNET discover our network, which is huge. We can tell if this IP address is doing the same stuff in different places. So this, if this IP is probably under the control of either cyber criminals or Moais. And for the human layer, it's more complex, but we can detect potentially changes in behavior. So what basically AI would be leveraging against us, like sentiment detection and so on, we can also detect for ourselves. But also we can detect patterns that are weird. Like say, for example, Paul is supposed to connect to our systems from UK and maintain, I don't know, whatever server for us, right? But all of a sudden, Paul is coming from Wyoming. That's suspicious. I mean, it's a smoking gun. It's not obvious who is holding the gun, but Paul is not supposed to be in Wisconsin, or at least he didn't tell us. So we can raise a flag and say, hey, look, this connection is fishy. It looks like something wrong. So behavioral detection can help you solve those kind of problems.
Interesting. How would you protect against, if I flag an IP as dangerous on my machine, do you need two or three collaborations before you shut down a specific IP? There's got to be some safety system in place there to prevent exploitation of the system against itself.
Yes, of course. It's called the Byzantine general problem. And we have the same problem as, for example, like a blockchain are having, right? So if someone declares I have 10 Bitcoin and is the only one declaring he has 10 Bitcoin on Earth, it's not going to be written in the ledger, right? We have the same problem here. So how we deal with this is the network is so vast now, we speak hundreds of thousands of machines, that we don't consider anyone speaking before they are past their 6 months quarantine time. So first of all, it chills out everyone. If you want to be part of the network and screw us, you will have to be there for at least 6 months and collaborate with us, which is cool, right? Second part is we want to make sure that if we ban an IP address, it's based on sufficient spottings from very different actors in the network. So if everybody is under the same network, say everybody is on AWS, it's just one spotting. It's not going to be considered 10 different sightings. We need you to come from different autonomous systems, like countries over the internet, to consider it as valid. And at least 50 of them, if I recall properly, on most scenarios. And we have, of course, whitelist as well. will never block something like Google Boot or Microsoft Update or Akamai Core IP or stuff like that. And we also have an AI that has a seat at the table to discuss whether it's a legitimate spotting or not. Long story short, once this curation process is done, the IP is integrated into Blocklist, distributed to our network, and it stays there as long as the crowd puts pressure on it. And when the crowd stop putting pressure, meaning they stop detecting it, it's removed from the Blocklist. So it's a totally dynamic system.
Right, because IP addresses are reassigned to people over time as things change. Oh, that sounds amazing. And this is all an open source project.
Yes, absolutely. It's in Golang. You can find us on GitHub. We also have like packages, I don't know, 3,000 packages for any kind of environment you can think about. Linux, Windows, BSD, you name it. And connect us with pretty much every kind of existing technology on the market, so you can integrate it nicely into your ecosystem. But yeah, it's open source at the core, so the community is playing a huge role, not only sharing the signals they receive, but also contributing with scenarios. What we found the best is like, it's not that we don't accept pull requests or merge requests on the core. We're okay with this if you are making a meaningful advance in the system, but we'd rather have you contribute, being able to contribute on scenarios, detection scenarios in your context, because we cannot possibly cover like hundreds of thousands of technologies, or I'd say thousands of technologies, because we don't have logs for all of them. So people that are bringing scenarios are very appreciated, because then the community can use them. And, you know, we have new visibility over things that we didn't know about yesterday.
Oh, that's very cool. I'll make sure to link that in the show notes for anybody listening who wants to check it out. So we'd address the concept of multiplayer firewalls. I think I mentioned it as a human immune system. Can you explain the concept of how these firewalls differ from a traditional firewall?
Yeah, sure. So deep down, a firewall, because a lot of people have been objecting on that, like CrowdSec is not a firewall. Of course, CrowdSec is not a firewall. CrowdSec is a WAF, web application firewall. CrowdSec is an IDS, an intrusion detection system. And CrowdSec is an IPS, intrusion prevention system. But let's take a bit of altitude. I love the philosophical part of it, as you see. So a firewall is supposed to accept or refuse connection based on IP addresses, based on a static rule set. Like A is allowed, B is not allowed to go in zone XYZ, right? That's a classical thing of a firewall as defined by DEC Alpha back in the 70s. Now, arguably, CrowdSec is a dynamic firewall. Instead of telling you're allowed or you're not allowed, we'll tell you, it's not that you're allowed or not allowed because you have a white card. It's you're allowed or not allowed because you have a reputation. You have a behavior. You have done things in the past that may not be acceptable and that should not be accepted in our network, or at least we don't want to accept you on our network. It's like saying at the entrance of a nightclub, hey, guys, you're good looking. You have a Lambo, fancy sneakers. You probably have money in your pocket. You're welcome in my club. Okay. Yeah, but what you don't know maybe is that my recent history, I've been browsing through how to become an ISIS soldier. Is it still fine to get into your nightclub because I have a fancy sneaker and a Lambo? No, because my behavior in the past was wrong, right? So that's how we build it, except instead of being humans that tend to stick a label on people forever, we forget voluntarily. We say, hey, you probably were dirty last year and now you're clean, or yesterday and now you're clean, so you're allowed back in the club. So that's why I think we can consider ourselves as a dynamic firewall. We react based on events, based on the behavior, and based on your reputation. Now, the next thing is to become a proactive firewall, an anticipatory firewall, like Minority Report, you know, like anticipating who's going to attack you. So those are the AI models we are training right now. They are pretty good at anticipating what IP will come to your door next, because they have been scanning your siblings, similar businesses over the world, or in similar context, or IP A, B, and C are like scanning, poking, trying to inject a CVE. Well, then you probably, if you see IP A at your door, IP B and C are next, you know? So that's why we are transiting from a static firewall to a dynamic firewall to an anticipatory firewall.
And how do these firewalls help prevent cyber criminals from employing things like divided and conquer attacks against businesses?
Well, the problem is, and we saw it during the Conti leaks, which was a strong event in our community. You know? So Conti was a strong ransomware group. And what happened is they got leaked, their internal file leaked, because some of them were Ukrainian. So when Russian attacked Ukraine, some Ukrainian were like, yeah, not so cool to work with Russian. Here is all the dirty laundry from our group. So we looked into it and we're like, wow, So they have problem getting clean IP addresses. It's not like they have an infinite amount of them. It's absolutely not true, actually. And if we look at our databases, we see that there's only a 5% rotation rate per day. Only arguably, I mean, still a lot, but it's not like 50%. So, and on top of that, you cannot really use VPNs. Why? Because VPNs are overly filtered. Second thing is they leave trails eventually, whatever they tell you. And also you have to pay them. So, and you want some of them, a lot of them, the clean one at least have KYC, and the dirty one are pretty much banned from everywhere. So only 5% of attacks are also carried through VPNs. So they don't have that many IP addresses available. So when you start burning them, you blow a definitely strong hole in the capacity, in their nuisance capacity. This is what I refer to as breaking all their rockets. Instead of defusing the payloads, the reputation is here to defuse their rockets.
Interesting. And I guess, yeah, people have blocks of IP addresses, and if they're only rotating 5%, they're going to leave a lot of overlap with what's being used in these different attacks.
Yeah, also, and, you know, for sometimes we extend ranges because we know, like, say, 40% of the range is rogue. So what are the odds that the 60 other percent are not? Extremely low, actually. And these ranges, they are specifically made for VPN and no. If you're a retailer and you are selling at all socks online, what do you care refusing this dirty VPN, blah, blah, blah? Is it the one client that's going to buy you $300,000 of socks? No, definitely not. Are the risks that you get compromised heavy? Yes, definitely yes. It's up to you to make the arbitration, but I would not let those people in.
Okay. Do you think that cyber criminals will evolve their tactics against this kind of defense? And what would that look like? How would they try and bypass this?
Yeah, the problem was, I mean, we initially thought about this for a long, long time before launching the company, more than I can reveal today. But the thing is, we take two fundamental pillars here. We take for granted that attacks will go through IP addresses, through the internet. And as long as it's true, they will be using IP addresses. And as long as it's true, if you have a network strong enough and fast enough, you'll be able to deter them, identify them, and kill them. The only way they can go faster than us is to make one shots, like the sniper shot from 2,000 meters away. And the attack is just so precise that, you know, nothing in your logs appear, nothing in your WAF rules can be seen. It's a pure zero day. You have no chance. You stand no chance. Okay, that may happen. This is the only way they can do the pull that trick. Everything else will be intercepting in a way or another. So it's like an Iron Dome. If you intercept 99.9%, it's already great. I mean, if you leave 0.1% to deal with to the team internally, that's not so bad. Besides, remember, okay, the guy went through your defenses, is inside. Now he needs to do lateral move and so on. He's going to make noise. He's going to be visible at some point. So it's not because he breached that it will be able to compromise your company in a broader way if you're properly defended. Now, other tactics may involve to get in closer ranges, and we saw it lately with, I think, APT-28, that put a quite tricky heist and very smart one, actually. Pretty obvious, but very smart. So what they did is they were targeting a company in a building, and they obviously didn't want to go to, they are Russians, they didn't want to go to America and get intercepted.
Oh, the Wi-Fi attack from across the street. Yeah, we talked about that on my Intel chats.
Yes. Pretty cute, right?
Yeah.
And that's a great way of doing it, because say, if you can get yourself an outpost close to your target on the other side of the street, then you can shelter this there for a while before launching a large-scale attack and still be very invisible. And you don't use that many IPs. You actually try to compromise the airwaves. So this would be extremely difficult to detect. Now, it's also extremely hard to pull.
Yeah. And for anybody listening, I will link to the news article about that attack. It's really fascinating and very clever way to compromise someone. Are there any common mistakes that everyday users make that leave them vulnerable to IP attacks? Just not having a firewall, not having CrowdSec, or is there operational errors?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of mistakes being done every day. That's the whole point of it. I mean, humans are humans, and there will be mistakes. The thing is, the system that should account for that, they should be able to deal with this, that the human would be the mistake. Now, obviously, nowadays, it's so important to have MFA everywhere. We cannot tell this enough. And we don't speak about like texts on your phone here. We speak about like physical MFA with a key, because this is the only way you are really going to secure your connections. And also, I'm a strong believer in the least privilege approach. So you see, I'm speaking about these kind of keys. Like this one is a Titan, YubiKey, Fido, you know.
Yeah, I have a YubiKey right over here too.
And I'm a strong proponent of the least privileged approach. So for example, I'm the CEO of my company. I don't have any access to the tech stack. Okay, I cannot compromise our tech stack. It's impossible. I just physically don't have the access. And I don't have any access to my bank account. Target me. Target me. Feel free. I'm not a soft target, but eventually if you break through, you will get what? My private email? Congratulations. Nothing.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. I remember when I was younger in my career, I would be really offended when I had access removed for something. I was like, well, I should have access to everything. Now that I'm older and wiser, I don't want access to anything I don't need to have access to.
Of course. And technically speaking, it makes no sense. It consumes resources. It's a risk to be taken. So I agree with you. It's something of grown-ups. We understand that we don't need to be everywhere. We don't need to do everything. We need to have to access everything. No matter if we are CEO, CTO, C whatever, we don't care. You have a line where you are running. Be good at that and be careful within this line and take care of your perimeter. And the rest is not, I think it's an Eastern European saying, probably Hungarian, something like this, is not my secures, not my monkeys.
I love that. Do you think that there's government policy or international cooperation that can play a role in tackling threats like malevolent IPs, or is this something that we have to solve in the private sector or open source communities?
It's hard to say. I mean, I would have loved to bet that the global forces would work together. There are more and more, taking down networks of cyber criminals by collaborating on a large scale between like US, France, Great Britain, Germany, and so on. That's great. I love this. I find that Interpol and all those organisms are doing absolutely amazing work. And by the way, they can feel free to knock at our door. We'll be helping as much as we can. Now, on a collaboration front across country, I'm not seeing this happen that often, or not even the countries, protecting their businesses as they should, or even their infrastructure as they should. There is a movement being done here, but the political landscape is so unstable lately everywhere in the world that I would not bet on any smart or advanced policy tomorrow. So I'd say take your destiny in hands. There are so many tools that are just free and open source and ready to get and ready to use. Defend your business. It's your business. Government will not be helping you or unlikely to be helping you on a large scale. It's not their role yet, or they don't consider it their role yet, or they don't have the tool or man to help you yet. Hopefully they will one day, but so far not. And also, I mean, maybe worth noting, I fell in love lately with another project called TateScale. Worth noting that this thing is just a tremendous revolution. So we had like the classical VPN approach before that, OpenVPN and the likes and Cisco, blah, blah, blah. Nowadays, there's a new protocol called WireGuard. It's more efficient, faster. It's very well done. And some smart guys did over it, TateScale, which is a project that basically allows you to hook any device into your own TateScale network. It's free for your personal use or for a small business use, up to 20 machines, I think. And they will be protected and discussed in the private network. It's like super easy to admin. So those are things that you can put together for free tomorrow to upgrade your security.
Yeah, no, that's a great product. We actually had a version integrated in with Lima Charlie at one point, but the adoption rate was very low. And so I think we rolled it out. So are you optimistic about the ability of the cybersecurity industry to stay ahead of attackers? Are we winning or?
I mean, it's a tie. It's long been a tie, but probably, I mean, we should not let down our guard, but people are aware nowadays that it's not the first priority after all the other. It's the first priority, period. And it's a strong change in the mindset of people that will bring security to another level. There is no one is outside of the reach of the scope of cyber criminals. It's like the mafia. You don't tomorrow become the head of the mob, right? Before that, you have to bully people, you have to ransom them, you have to sell drugs or kill people in the street before you climb the ladder, right? So if you are a small plumber in a lost village and you think you're out of reach, you're not. Because investing maybe $20 will give me access to blackmailing you for $20,000. So it's worth it. It's a worthy target and you will pay. So yes, there are groups that are capable of entering pretty much anywhere you think, like Equation and so on, the legends of our field, like the boogeyman, but they're not concerned by you. Now, you are not out of reach because there are so many small fishes, smaller cyber criminals that are willing to climb the ladder that someone will go after you eventually. But I think nowadays everybody realized and understood this. There are so many SMBs that have been struck and struck again that, you know, that takes cyber defense seriously. And that was a wake-up call. This is all we needed to take off. So I think we're not winning, but we are progressing fast.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any single piece of advice you'd give to listeners about staying safe online? We mentioned MFA and YubiKeys. Is there anything beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, it's about, you know, being reasonable when you see something with a sense of urgency is probably wrong. If someone tells you like, you're a dirty pig, we have pictures of you, whatever, it's 99% wrong. Yeah, no reason. And even if they have, what would they do with it? Like publish it where? And you can deny it nowadays saying that it's been AI generated and it's a fake. Congratulations. Yeah. So never answers to those people, right? That's a basic practice of it. But protect yourself. Have strong password. Have a password wallet. And if you really need to memorize a password, which can be case for me, for example, I have, right, I don't know, maybe 30 passwords in my head, but that's my job. But yeah, think about this. Password is not a password. It can be a passphrase pretty much everywhere. So take a phrase that is unique to you, make it yours, and vary it in subtle, smart way, depending on the context. For example, if you're in professional area, you will use three groups, bands that you like. And if you're in private area, you use three other bands that you like, or three delicious dishes that you like, and you put underscore or hyphens or whatever in between, and you have a super solid, strong password.
Okay, this is the last one I have for you. It's the one I ask of everybody that comes onto the show. It can be as wide or as narrow as you want. Do you have any predictions for the future of cybersecurity?
Yes. AI, I know it's a commonplace nowadays to say that AI will be everywhere, but AI will play a major role in the next 12 months. And we will see the rise of MOAs, multimodal offensive AI. So industry need to get ready, need to be aware of that, and need to prepare, to brace, and to anticipate. And this is always what you do. The best investment you have in cybersecurity is anticipation. So let's anticipate altogether what's coming, because we know it's coming.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show with me today, Philippe. I think it was a great conversation. Fascinating technology you're building over there. I will link everything in the show notes.
My pleasure. Thank you, Christopher.
Okay. Take care, sir. And that concludes this episode of the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast. If you have any feedback or ideas for future topics, please send an email to defenders@limacharlie.io. You can access the intel we talk about on the show in real time and join the conversation on the Lima Charlie Community Slack channel at slack.limacharlie.io. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with someone or leaving a rating or review. And don't forget to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening from. Thanks for listening in. We'll see you on the next episode.